This is Talk Is Cheap. This is Curtis. Yeah, hold on 1 second. Okay, I've got Rosemary on the phone. She's fighting the good fight in Alaska to stop fracking in Alaska. So hold on for 1 second. And so I'm going to put her on right now. Right, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so what's your name and who are you, and tell me about the organizations that you're affiliated with. I know you're affiliated with a lot of organizations.
My name is Rosemary Adolorok, and I live in the village of Noxit. I'm a member of the city council. I've been working on issues related to changes to our lands and waters here in the Arctic and the national energy policy. I've worked with many organizations over the years, whether it be state, federal agencies, or industry, or the nonprofit organizations. So I've been quite a bit of different work. I'm currently involved with a tribal think tank through CDC.
All right, and so the issue up there is they're fracking in Alaska, and this isn't getting reported on the mainstream news. So nobody knows about this?
I've known about the fracking that has gone on along the Dalton Highway for a long time now. I have been communicating about these concerns for many, many years. We're very worried about what is being re-injected into the ground. We have no proof that a lot of the toxic substances that the industry brings to the Arctic does not leave the Arctic. And so we are fearful that these substances are being re-injected into the ground. And what does that mean for our food and water? We're not having the studies to assess these areas after they've been developed and to see if any of these contaminants are leaching into the waterways. So when we fear these things, we see changes in our animals before we have support from science. We've seen concerns related to the broad whitefish for a number of years now. And we found out some of the early oil and gas development had left exposures to DDTs and PCBs. So we're very concerned about the current activities and the reinjection that's occurring.
And so you've actually seen changes in the animal life and in nature, whether there's science behind it or not. This is your personal. You've viewed this personally.
Yes, I've had elders that have brought me fish with abnormalities. I've seen tumors in the egg sac. I've seen tumors in the muscle. I've seen malformations on the fish with crooked spines. I've seen increase in parasites and changes to the quality of the eggs with malformation, maybe immature development, and elders come and ask us questions, and we try to, if we can send a fish for sampling, we try to do so, but we don't always get the fish out in a condition where it can be tested.
Well, and I suppose that costs money too. So, and you're just and Nuksut is just a tiny town on the north slope of Alaska, right? Who is helping
yes.
you? Who is helping you with this?
I've had elders in every one of the villages on the North Slope ask me to continue this work and thank me for doing this work. I have young adults that have come and talked to me about furthering their education because of the amount of comments that I give. I've worked with Alaska Communities Against Toxins. They brought us some information related to the early oil and gas development as well as the amount of spills that are happening per year. I've worked with Alaska Wilderness League, who's been working in D.C. on a lot of issues related to the Arctic. I've done some work with Sierra on natural gas and issues around coal. There's been many different organizations that are interested in the Arctic that we've worked with in many different ways. One of my tribal elders with the regional tribal council told me that we have to work with everyone who comes to the Arctic, because even if they have good intentions, they can impact our way of life.
Well, and so, and what about the, there's an environmental lobby in Alaska, isn't there?
There are quite a bit of different organizations that do lobby about these issues in the Arctic.
Right, but I thought in your email that you're saying they're not really helping you very much.
I don't get financial support from these entities. A lot of times they will ask me to work with them on various issues. They might provide an opportunity to attend a various meeting where comments are being raised around the Arctic or oil and gas development. But I don't have any of these organizations that have developed a budget to help me in the work in the Arctic.
Right, and you mentioned the tribal elders and the tribal councils. I thought that the tribal elders are what's supposed to really run the tribe, and that the tribal elders are the ones who tend to sell off things, and you know, they're the ones that are doing casinos and things like that. What is, are the tribal elders a good thing in your experience in Alaska?
Yes, I rely on our tribal elders all the time.
But the tribal councils, I mean.
The tribal council I also work with, but the tribal elders have their own process, and they are always have been elders that have given me guidance. When I was a community health aide, I didn't have the time to work on these issues, but three little old ladies came to me at the clinic and told me that I needed to talk about the importance of our tradition and culture, because I was limiting my talk to the importance of our health. And so with that, they've always given me guidance. I've always had elders that I go and visit prior to going to a meeting, tell them what the meeting is about, what some of the questions that are being asked of us, and whether or not I should participate. So I depend on the elders. I would also work with the elders that are on our council, making sure that we receive information and take that time ahead to translate it for their guidance. Our tribal councils have elders, but they often are younger people, young adults and adults that are on the tribal councils. But in Alaska, we don't have casinos, so that isn't an issue that we have. But in Alaska, the ownership of our lands did not stay with the tribes. When they created the INCSA corporations, the ownership of the land went to the INCSA corporations. The INCSA corporations are supposed to be the financial arm of the tribe, but there was never any documents created to say that they were supposed to work with the tribes, and so not all corporations work with the tribes. But Stevens put a one-liner in a budget amendment that allowed the corporations to be consulted with as tribes, and that can be a real issue when their value for the land is about profitability, dollars per acre or dollars per barrel, and not the vitality of the renewal and sustainability of our lands and waters for our families and future generations. Some of these issues come at conflict. Some of our corporate leaders do have this interest, but more are worried, are more in the process for the profitability.
Right, but the tribal elders are definitely not in favor of just sheer profitability.
Our elders are looking out for the best interests of our communities. We recognize that there are things that are going to happen to change our lands and waters, and we work diligently to protect what's not been leased. But we recognize once these areas have been leased, we don't have much control over the factor. And so we work with what happens after the leases that occur, whether or not they protect our way of life. We try to put in recommendations on ways that the development could be done to be less impactful to our daily lives. But it's always up to the industry to decide whether or not they should or could or may, because the documents that we created over many years in the 90s for the EIS and the National Petroleum Reserve was very prescriptive. But we didn't get to stay at the table to ensure our priorities kept in the document, and industry was to put blanket changes to allow them to say whether or not they will protect anything that's important to our way of life.
Well, so that brings me to, for instance, we have in Oregon here, we have a moratorium now on fracking. And California has done that, and Pennsylvania, New York has done that. But it's had a huge outcry from a large groups of people, including, you know, celebrities and stuff, in order to get that done. So what is different in Alaska that why aren't you at the table, for instance?
I go to these meetings on a regular basis. I attend our local community meetings expressing the importance of our concerns. However, the process does not stay in our village. It goes from here into the regional center. So in our case, it would be in Barrow. It goes from Barrow down into Anchorage, into Juneau for further meetings. And then the other decisions go into Washington, D.C. When we can't stay at the table to express the importance of our priorities, and industry gets to stay at every one of these meetings, the importance of our priorities do not stay in this process, and it's been very difficult. Our tribes have had the greatest impact, especially with this administration, on all funding sources that allow our tribes to address concerns related to our communities. But all of our tribes have always been underfunded, and we never get what is supposed to go through to help our tribal communities when it goes to the state, and the state decides whether or not we get any resources or not. Maybe we'll get an email that says, put up a notice. That's not the same thing as being able to travel into Juneau to attend these very important meetings where decisions on the Arctic are occurring.
Well, and what is the governor and the mayor doing about this? They're supposed to represent the community. What about, what do they do? What are they doing?
The governor, when he ran through this process, he really got the corporate leadership behind him, in which the corporate leadership put out massive emails to support Dunleavy. And unfortunately, he never held true to any of his promises that he gave in this electoral process. Our current mayor also has not stayed strong in trying to protect our way of life. The current effort has changed our federal subsistence representation to put people who will not be as opposed to the process of changing our lands and waters that impact our way of life and the feeding of our families. And these important issues were being top laid with oil and gas supporters and from the grassroots. Every way that we have to try to attend, our funding has been impacted. And so we're having tremendous concerns and having to work in so many different ways to try to find resources to even participate.
All right, I'm going to come back to funding a little bit, but what about tax subsidies? Didn't the governor, are the fracking corporations given tax subsidies to extract this stuff?
Many subsidies are occurring with oil and gas development, and we have been working so diligently to try to address some of these concerns. Unfortunately, this big issue of who gets to fund, who gets to talk to, which ears are being pulled, it's not our ears that are being communicated effectively to, and we don't have the money to put towards the appropriate decision-making process like others are doing that are impacting bad decision-making.
Well, all right, you keep going back to money, so let's go there. The I just researched that, or I know that Alaska, the people of Alaska get a portion of the revenue from the oil. And I just noticed that it's $58 billion because they've reinvested this money over the years since the 70s. And there's $58 billion sitting there. What, first of all, do you feel like the oil companies pay their fair share for this, for the oil that they extract out of there? And secondly, why aren't you getting, you know, I mean, you're not getting, who's responsible for getting you that, some of that money? Why aren't you, it's just because you're not at the table is what, or they're having backdoor meetings to decide what is going on with this money? Is that why you're not getting?
Definitely there are those that participate in ways that allow them to line their pockets without going through a process that allows it to be very public and transparent. but there are others that, you know, are trying to do things in a good way, and they look about how our life is and try to protect our way of life. But this process is very hard. It costs us a lot to be engaged. My children are very frustrated that I have participated for so long, and a lot of it has taken me away from the activities of our family. But the importance of bringing our voice into these very important meetings outweigh those costs, even though I hate to not be there to help my son cut up his caribou or to help cut up the fish, because these important resources to feed our family, I can't feed them from the store like I can from our lands and waters. And we work in so many different ways trying to affect these decisions, but we don't have control of this process. This process goes behind closed doors, and what is said and done between those doors, you can see what happened to Nooksit with the loss of our deferral for Cross Island when I was the mayor and was kept out of the meeting where those papers were signed for BLM and BOEM. But yet these important decisions impact our daily lives, and the risk of our generations and our future are a reality of what we're facing.
And your representatives are allowing them to do this. And I mean, don't you have, isn't this part of your constitution? Your state constitution should provide for you to have a say in what's going on. And I mean, how many times should you have to have a meeting? You know, if the people have spoken, why do they keep keep having meetings, even though the people have said that they're against it?
It's because of this national policy. Even though we live at 40 below, I know to heat my home right now, with it being nice out, I don't need that oil and gas. But when it's 40 below, I need that oil and gas to keep our house warm. But does that mean that I have to allow oil and gas development to completely surround our village and box us in with pipelines? That should not happen.
Right.
But the priorities of our village have to go in within the region, within the state, and within the nation. And unfortunately, our priorities don't stay at those tables. And even though we have been pushing tremendously to limit the amount of emissions related to oil and gas, with all of this, especially after we suffered the exposure from the Repsol blowout, we still are dealing with millions of pounds of emissions with nitrous oxide per year. This amount of emissions should not be allowed to occur if they were enforcing the national air quality. But when they allow industry to have exemptions and industry to be in control of this process, profitability stays at the table and emissions expand and continue. And so we've tried so many different ways, and we're still trying in many different ways.
Well, so that's
what
I mean, though.
Trying to create filtration in our homes and in our school to reduce our impacts. Yes, I'm doing that currently, because we know we're going to be left in our village when we suffer the next blowout. And it only took 2 hours for the whole village to develop respiratory distress. We know we have to hunker down in our homes when we go through the next event. Well, so we're trying in many different ways to protect our life. But we have to work with others to affect other decision makers who can affect these decisions in the Arctic, because our decision makers are bought off in this process. And it doesn't matter how many times I go in and try to work with them. I get comments like Stevens gave, oh, but you have to let them drill because you want your dividend. Or like Oliver Levitt said in our comprehensive planning for oil and gas development, we have to let them drill in the ocean or they're going to come with their tanks. This
right.
Intimidation shouldn't happen, but it occurs on a regular basis, and the importance of our way of life is still very important regardless of the national energy policy, and it should not cost the health of the people who live where energy development is going to occur.
Well, Well, and so you're saying, when you say they, though, I want to make it clear, the oil companies you're saying are paying off your public officials illegally.
I would definitely. There has been a process. Vico was engaged with the payoffs that were occurring with Stevens. If that investigation had continued, all 13 of the Angsa corporations would have been involved in that investigation. But when he died, that investigation stopped. Did it change the fact that there was evidence for all 13 corporations? No. You have to go find that information. It's there.
All right, and so let's move on to is there any benefit to the community at all, any true benefit? The jobs that it creates, don't they bring in outside people?
We have plane loads of people that come in for the various jobs that are associated with oil and gas development. We have people that have been trained in various ways to be working in this field. One of my nephews was trained in the water and sewer project, worked in our village, but was offered a more higher paying job with the industry, so he's doing that work over there right now. We have many that have become heavy equipment operators, and so they work on the ice roads associated with that. But still, the average length of employment is about 2 weeks. And others, they have the jobs that start from the beginning of the development of the ice road throughout the whole season of the ice road. We're the last ones to go to work, and we're the first ones laid off.
Uh-huh. The locals, you mean?
Yes.
Right, and what about the small businesses in the area? Are they in favor of this?
There are some businesses that have been created to deal with oil and gas development and some of the work associated with that, but there are also other businesses that live for the way of life that we have in the Arctic, and they don't support. So there are some that support, there are some that oppose. In our village, we were over 50% opposed offshore oil and gas development, but about 50 to 50% support onshore development. So there's some that are willing to work with, but there's also those that have suffered through this process and know that it's going to impact our way of life for the generations to come.
Right, and what about the contractors? Are there local contractors that are being used, or do they bring in outside contractors?
It goes both ways. Meltwater is the closest hard-packed road to our village. That contract negotiation did not occur on the North Slope. That contract was given to NANA Corporation. So there are some of those kinds of things that occur. But there are some of the projects, like our local Nunnokar subsidiary for Kukta Corporation. They had a contract to do maybe 50 miles of ice road this year. So it just varies on what they're able to leverage. Some are getting some work. Some are getting just seasonal work. It varies. Some are making astronomical gains. Some have already folded under.
And, well, but I mean, it's still not worth polluting the air and the water. I mean, what do they say are they willing to take the money for the work rather than even though they're, you know, what are they saying about the environmental impacts? What are the local contractors saying about the environmental impacts? Is it worth the money?
There are members of our community on some of these subsidiary boards, and we have members that continue to express the importance of our way of life and how we live and participate in this process, trying to prevent the continued impact to us. And so there are some that are very for development, some that are very against development. But we recognize that once the lease occurs, that there's going to be activity. And if we don't engage with them, we have more severe impacts. Contractors want to come back and get more contracts. So if they fail to honor some of the protections that we have on these contracts, then they may not be able to get further projects. So some of them work diligently. Some of them recognize that profitability is higher if you exempt some of the protections that we want to put in there. And if those kind of things are caught, then we try to report them and have a reaction to this process. But the reality is we are not in control of who gets the contracts, and so we can only communicate about how these contractors are impacting our daily life.
Well, so it sounds like they are... You're saying that the contractors are in favor of the restrictions, or they are not. They would rather get away without get around the restrictions.
Some are not. Uh-huh. Some really work to improve the bottom line and take any shortcuts that they can for the highest profitability.
But they're gaining in the short term. Right. In the long term, they would gain. They would actually gain more if they did it the right way.
Exactly. And so, but we have contractors that go belly up every year. But the reality is, they got the contract and completed the contract and got the highest profit. But later on, you know, they go belly up because they didn't follow the guidelines, and they have environmental impacts, and there's fees and fines. But the business is already belly up, so it's left for our state and local region to deal with the reaction from what's left behind.
Right, and nobody goes to jail.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, and I have written down here the Halliburton loophole. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. Halliburton has been engaged up here for many, many years, and we have worked in many different ways. I work with the pipeline safety trust out of Bellingham to try to improve some of these issues around pipelines.
All right, so they're in charge of the pipeline, and of course they're a defense contractor and not definitely not a local contractor.
All right, so
what are some of the solutions to this? So you mentioned national energy policy. You want to go into that?
Yes. We know that we cannot continue to extract the oil and gas that is in the Arctic and continue our way of life into the future, and that renewable energy must be used in a stronger way throughout our nation to reduce the demands on oil and gas. We know that there are cleaner methods that can produce energy that will reduce the impact to people's health, and they should be utilizing these methods to develop energy and not give away the profitability of oil and gas development that they do in the Arctic. Venezuela forces the industry to pay for the health care of the whole nation down there, and it should occur up here. But when you have profitability and those that are getting profits in their own pockets, as the ones who are at these decision-making tables, there are us who are left behind that suffer the consequences of poor decisions.
Well, and it's your land that they're using, so that you should get some kind of compensation for it, I would think. But
Our traditional and cultural use areas extend throughout the region, but it's not land that we control. A lot of it, the industry controls now, the state of Alaska, the federal government, and then the ANCSA corporations. So as tribal people, we still hunt and fish and gather in our lands, but now we have to work with the process that has changed the ownership of these lands and have restrictions on traditional and cultural use areas because of this development.
You know, and what this reminds me of is in Los Angeles. I grew up in Los Angeles, and we had smog there when I was a kid, and so they passed all these laws that we have to pay an extra $1,000 for a car that is clean running car, but yet they allow the oil refineries down there and the factories to just spew out toxins. Shouldn't they put stuff back the way they found it? I don't mind you making money necessarily, but I don't see what the problem is with putting stuff back at least close to the way you found it. There's no reason to just dump crap in the air and water just to extract oil.
I agree. I think that there should be a very strong support to force the industry to restore these areas. I think that there should be a strong support to prevent the degradation of air and water, and a reaction to the permit process when the appropriate monitoring identifies concerns of emissions. But yet, we are working through this process in so many different ways and have failed to successfully protect our concerns on these issues. We have made tremendous amount of improvements. Areas that are being developed have some good mechanisms around them, but the reality is that our state doesn't enforce these measures, and profitability allows some to make decisions to take shortcuts, and emissions continue. So we shouldn't have to continue to fight to restrict the emissions during inversions. It's been well documented that emissions increase and concentrate during inversions. But still, even though I've been talking about this for over 35 years, I'm still waiting for that development to protect our way of life and the health of our people by preventing flaring of gas during inversions.
Well, yeah, explain what an inversion is. I'm sorry.
An inversion is when we have cold and warm air that is trapping the air and keeps a cap over the region and allows concentration of emissions, like if there's a natural gas flare to occur, the air doesn't dissipate so that the particulates increase in concentration in this bubbled inversion area.
Oh, it's an inversion layer similar to Los Angeles. So what do you want them to do during that time? You want them to stop emitting, just briefly to stop emitting until the temperature changes. Mm-hmm. All right, and what is the blowout that you're talking about?
Repsol is an Italian company that drilled a well 17 miles away from the village, and in 2006 to 2009, one of those years, they had a blowout. They had a diverter put on the well. A diverter allows the gas to go out one end of the pipe and the staff to run in the other direction, so you give a little bit of time, hopefully without an explosion, to allow people to get away from the exposure. But a diverter does not cap the well to stop the emissions when it's happening. We were lucky the emissions lasted a few hours. Unfortunately, the plume was over a few miles. And when the green plume reached the village, it caused tremendous amount of respiratory distress to where our health aide that was working at the time, her son was so bad, she couldn't go to work. And our region in North Slope Borough said to just shut down the clinic. Excuse me, we have a whole village facing respiratory distress, and it's okay in your mind to say shut down the clinic? Well, that's okay also, because they also made a radio announcement that there were no health concerns to the Repsol blowout. Right. Well, gee, our whole village suffered. We were very concerned about the Repsol blowout, and we're still worried about that.
And you could see it in the air. It's not like it wasn't invisible. And you can measure even if it was invisible, you can measure the amount of which brings me, and I thought you have an air quality board in Alaska too, and they do nothing.
Well, we do have air quality program in Alaska, and they are trying to do different things. However, we have one inspector for the whole state, and this state is such a large state that they cannot get to these areas to adequately enforce these regulations on air quality. So, yes, we do have a program, but, yes, do they depend on industry to self-report, self-monitor, and self-regulate? Tremendously so.
Right, and it's not like there isn't enough
tons of emissions? Very much so.
And it's not like there isn't enough money to pay for a regulatory staff for air quality. All right, and so, again, though... one other thing is I noticed that, I don't know if you want to comment on this, but the, if this stuff cost a little bit more money, and to do it right, it would cost a little bit more money, then these companies are going to have to diversify and move on to a different technology when it, when costs become prohibitive. We should have been off. I mean, we should have been off oil in the 70s. I can remember when we had gas rationing when I was a kid, and we should have moved off of this long ago. And we've had these other technologies have been in existence. So it's, even if you're a capitalist, at the risk of sounding like a capitalist, this is not, you should have moved on. You can't expect just to do stuff forever. Any comment on that?
The process that we've dealt with is that there has been so much profitability, especially behind closed doors, that unfortunately resources continue to be extracted from our state. We have the cowboy mentality come up and run the wild country and get it all while you can because it's not going to be wild in the future. Well, the reality is they've impacted our lives in so many different ways, but it's the future generation that I continue to do this work for because I see our little eyes. And when we have those kids with respiratory distress and they can't breathe and there's nothing you can do to change the air quality outside our doors, you work very hard to try to find ways to reduce the exposures and to have those little eyes look more healthy.
Right, and this is Alaska, which has some of the purest air and water in the world. You know, I just can't believe it. So, and again, this is not capitalism. This is gaming the system, is why. If it was true capitalism, they would have diversified and moved on to other technology long ago.
Exactly, and it's because those people can get their profitability behind closed doors. They keep coming back through the same process, and until our people in Alaska really stand up and take a stronger voice, we're fighting a pretty tough battle. And the industry has ingrained their money in so many ways in our state that it's very difficult to get people to push for better development with decreasing impacts to human health.
All right, so what can people do about this? And specifically, is there a senator and congressman that we can write letters to about this specifically, or
Lisa Murkowski, Don Young, and our important people in Alaska, definitely send letters to them. Look at your committees that are on the National Energy Committees and connect with all of the various members on that committee because all of them affect the way that his decisions are occurring in the Arctic. There is information available on Alaska Wilderness League website. They have the various bills and current issues that we're facing right now in the legislature on their website, and people can find out about these important bills and rights or comment to the legislators that are affecting these bills. People can learn about these very important issues. They can talk to their own circles. They can work to connect the Arctic to your local community meetings because your local community meetings are affecting the oil and gas development in our region. And by understanding this connection, we can improve these protections in your lands and in our lands. Learn about the important animals, the birds that migrate to the Arctic. We share them with every state in the United States, and they come to the Arctic for renewal. And if we want to have the return of these important species to your state, we need to be protecting the lands and waters they come to renew. And that's here in the Arctic in what we call the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska, or the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, or the Arctic Tundra.
Right, and I could look this up myself, too, but I mean, I wonder who it is. There's got to be somebody in the federal government that handles corruption and these backdoor meetings. Is it, I don't know if it's the Ways and Means Committee or, besides the FBI?
All of those resources are there. I've done work with various, the Office of Management and Budget. I've done some work with the Ways and Means. I've done some work with national banks in international banking to try to affect the way that they fund some of these activities.
Oh, yeah.
All of these things are so very important to connect. You know, if you find the money trail, you can follow some of these concerns and why we're losing out on these decisions because it's always tied to money.
Well, yeah, we're looking at that here in Portland and Eugene. Is your city and your pension fund invested in these companies that are financing this stuff? And so one thing you can do, I can tell, I don't know if you guys are doing that up there, is get out of these major banks and get into a local bank and get your city to run their funding, run their business through a smaller, more local bank, rather than these large, the big five banks. All right, Rosemary, anything else you want to say?
I really appreciate the work that's being done in Oregon. The state has taken a stand on these very important issues. They're working to protect your lands and waters and to affect some of these regulations. Your work is very important in the Arctic, and we appreciate the work that you all are doing, and we can support you in any way. Please feel free to contact me. I'll do what I can from here in the Arctic. I live in a small village of 500, and my grandchildren, half of them already use inhalers, so I know that I need the national response to this process to give me hope that not all of my grandchildren will need inhalers to breathe. So thank you for your work. Continue on. We have the goodness to grow, and we want to see more goodness grow.
All right. Thanks very much for your time, Rosemary. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
I appreciate your calling back.
Okay. Bye. Okay, folks. It's kind of heart-wrenching. I can't believe some of the purest air and water in the world is being polluted just for a technology, a completely outdated technology. And if you've heard me before, rooftop solar. All right, this is KEPW 97.3 FM. The show's Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media any way you can. KEPW 97.3 FM. Well, I knew this would happen. This CD. Sorry about that. Minor technical difficulties. You can also send us money to kepw.org.
We got this bottle of beer at the summer table, and he said to me, he handed it to me, and he said, swish it around a bit. I said, what do you mean, swish it around a bit? And he held it, and he shook it, and it went all over me. I got absolutely drenched. Trevor, it's quite, I miss everyone up in London. So what are you going to do in London? Have you got a job yet?
No, I'm looking for a job. My name's Dawn Evans, as you know.
KEPW 97.3 FM with Echo. All right. KEPW 97.3 FM. The show's talk is cheap. All right. So got a little extra time. So here's. What John Lively wrote me about. I'm trying to get cardboard recycled instead of cutting down trees. Get the subsidies that they use for cutting down trees, trees that is, used to recycle cardboard so we don't have to cut down trees so much. Instead of subsidizing tree cutting, because that's not a capitalist thing. They wouldn't be able to cut the trees down. Wood, you don't need to make houses out of wood anymore. We have all kinds of things. An entire house made out of wood. So this is what John Lively wrote me back. Thank you, and I haven't read this yet, so you're getting it at the same time as me. Thank you for taking this time to write to me. It's clear that you have done your reading, and I appreciate hearing your insights. As you know, the state of Oregon has been reliant on timber revenues for many decades, and many vital services and agencies have been structured according to that funding source. In recent history, timber revenues have begun to decline for a multitude of reasons, and it has been a gradual process to shift the state away from its dependence on those monies, especially at the county level. It has been a struggle for many jurisdictions to adapt to the changing environment. We had a bill this session that would have accomplished some of what you suggest. House Bill 2020, dubbed the Cap and Trade Bill, would do a great many things that would make significant investments in green infrastructure. We would have capitalized on our treasured forests and put us on a path to dramatically cut and sequester carbon emissions statewide. The bill passed in the House of Representatives early as this month, but as of writing this, has been unable to secure enough votes for passage in the Senate. We must urgently take significant steps to address the destruction of our climate. No matter which direction we decide to take to accomplish this, it will inevitably entail some restructuring and an adaptation of our economy and the way we do things more generally. At the same time, this presents a good opportunity to also implement some of what you suggest and encourage the development of cutting-edge recycling, hemp, and energy industries. I'll keep this in mind as we continue these critical discussions in the Capitol. As always, I welcome feedback and appreciate your hearing. I appreciate hearing your thoughts. Please feel free to reach out with any further questions or concerns. John Lively, State Representative, House District 12, Springfield, Oregon. All right, so. Yeah, they're relying on this cap and trade thing, but like I say, there's plenty of subsidies that they can vote against, and Republicans should be in favor of this because conservatives don't want the government involved in anything, right? So that should be an easy deal. And I will say too, your pensions. Personally, I'd like to get rid of Weyerhaeuser completely, but. You know, we may need a big corporation to handle all our recycling needs, although I find that hard to believe. But, yeah, and everybody's pension is invested in Weyerhaeuser, so it'd be great if they could diversify out into tree planting and recycling and stop cutting down trees. And I don't think that's an unreasonable request. So, I'll give you further updates on that. I'm researching what federal subsidies, the exact federal subsidies that I will tell you about in future installments of Talk is Cheap. here on KEPW 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Low Power FM, simulcast on KEPW.org. Stay tuned for Modern Mono. If you're listening, Modern Mono, no profanity. I don't know how you can play punk rock without profanity, but try it. See if try to do that.